Welcome to Locked On Golden Knights. Pressure is a privilege. Jack Eichel. We'll have more coming up next.
For Locked On Golden Knights, your daily podcast on the Vegas Golden Knights, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hi again, everyone. I'm Tony Cardasco along with Chris Golic. You could follow us at LockGK, both on Twitter and now on YouTube. We are available on YouTube each and every day. And myself, I'm Tony Cardasco on Twitter. And we've got at TD Chris G, my man Chris Golic on Twitter as well. We are brought to you today. Line Bet Online has you covered with more prop and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. Sports, right, Chris? And coaches, for most of my life, I have heard terminology, pressure builds diamonds. I've heard that term in locker rooms. I've heard it on the field of play. But for Jack Eichel, he's got his own version. And Eichel, as we know, played the final 19 games of this past season with that broken hand. He says that pressure is a privilege and part of the gig. He said, if you want to be the guy, you have to come through. I have no doubt in the future myself that Jack Eichel will definitely come. I feel that he will come through for VGK next season. And the team will be, I think, playoffs. Eichel, he was the newcomer to this team. He felt that he still wants to be the player that his teammates lean on. Can he be that guy?
Without a doubt. And pressure is a privilege. It's a statement that I love. I mean, there's so much truth, so much weight behind it. And it's also so simple. He definitely can be that guy. He's been pretty close to a point a game player throughout his career. He had a very good start with the Golden Knights, and things slowed down once he broke his thumb. I mean, a broken thumb. Like, I think some people think it's, this isn't football, you know, where you can have an unfortunate incident with a firework and, you know, keep on going here. You know, this is hockey. It's a lot different. And it just shows his commitment to the team, how fast he came back. He tried to come back into the game when it happened. He took a shift and obviously he couldn't finish it up. Future captain. I mean, he could be the future captain of the Golden Knights sooner than later. I think that is what the team is breeding him for. I think that's what they are conditioning the fans to expect. And I think you're going to see a lot more billboards with Jack Eichel around town. You're going to see a lot more, tweets coming out with Eichel's face on them. I'll see if I can stir the pot up a little bit with him, and maybe we'll get him on the show. Tony, what do you think?
I think that sounds really good. Would you much rather, though, think about, you know, Jack Eichel and his role in his history? Would you much rather have a winner? Would you much rather have a winner, rather, you know, as your marquee player, rather than having a player who has the upside, right, like a Jack Eichel does, get to win? He's not gotten to the playoffs. And I like myself that are proven winners. I like proven winners on my team. But I do feel that Eichel could break through, and I think that he's starting next season.
Connor McDavid's not a proven winner. What's Connor McDavid done? I mean, I see where you're going with that, and sure, you know, the pedigree for a playoff run or a deep playoff run is not there for Jack Eichel. But, I mean, the Buffalo Sabres, I'll try to put this as PC as possible, even though we're recording late tonight, so we're a little, you know, a little looser, a little freer. But what have the Sabres done since they had Jack Eichel? What have they done? Sure, they've put some players around him. Taylor Hall was there for a while, I remember. And, you know, is it Jack Eichel's fault? Is he the reason that they did not make the playoffs? Is he not a winner because of not elevating his play. I mean, I'll say it again, Tony. I looked up his stats before he came here. I think he was like not quite a point per game player, but it was like 94 or 95% of his games he had at least a point. Is he hogging the puck and showboating and hot dogging? I don't think so. I don't see him to be that type of player. We see the space he creates here in Vegas. We see how well he does when both of his thumbs are working, let alone when only one thumb is working. So, sure, he is not a proven winner. That is something that will be held against him, especially from the hockey media, especially from Buffalo, who is just salivating at him not going to the playoffs this year, even though the Sabres weren't even a heartbeat from being relevant this season as far as competitive goes. But he's going to get better. He will lead the team to a better place with a much larger support. I mean, he never had a Mark Stone or a Patch or Reddy or the type of defense around him that he has in Vegas. So he's going to be just fine.
And the neck surgery, we have to talk about that Eichel had, and kind of if it's one playoff games, come on, get off of his back. But the neck surgery that he hadn't played, he hadn't played, hadn't been ice in a year. With a delay in Buffalo for that surgery, and then the eventual surgery, and the way that he came back, and as George McPhee stated, he had cast that Eichel passed each and every test this season, and he did ganged around an awful lot. Is really concerned when Eichel initially came, when he really got back on the ice, and he played for the he was. Checking and getting checked in return that he really came back, and he came back so fresh, and I thought that he did a good job. I was real impressed that of a lot of those physical encounters, if you will. And do you think as he goes on and next season and in the future, I think he'll be treated as a regular player and not someone who was going through this surgery and who had to battle back from those great odds?
Yeah, Tony. I mean, I think next year you're coming in fresh. Next year is the new start for him, I think, not as much as it was this season. Last season was his dress rehearsal. It was make sure he can still perform at a high level given his health situation. McPhee did mention it only took him really the first game or two to be concerned with Eichel taking a hit and possibly causing an injury and having that anxiety. And then, yeah, Eichel was right in the middle of things. He was back-checking. He was forechecking and checking, period, and just playing a good, tough, physical brand of hockey while trying to create opportunities along the way.
And do you think that he's going to be considered a leader? When he first arrived here in Las Vegas, remember all of those on the AHL, Silver Knight team, they were absent off him. They looked up to him, and I some sort of value. But at times he was a little bit distant from the team. We don't know what he was going through. Maybe it was just the adjustment of playing with him.
Yeah, I mean, he comes to Vegas, high expectations. And Vegas, when he came here, really is when he started. When he was first at the stadium and then right around the surgery, January or so, that's when things really went downhill. So now he has this added pressure. Okay, he's thinking that Mark Stone and Patch Aretti and all the other players who were hurt were going to be around him. And all of a sudden, he's the guy, Tony. He is the guy that was, in his mind, and probably most of the fans, present company included, myself, was going to be our savior to have us limp into the playoffs and maybe even steal that seventh seed so we wouldn't have to go against Colorado. We saw how well that went for Nashville, but, we all thought he was going to get us there. And as far as the distance part, I mean, new city, new situation, and there's a lot bigger voices, a lot more veteran leadership than what he had when he was in Buffalo. So I think when he first came here, it was kind of like when the second or third grader goes to the new school. First couple of lunches, they might kind of be on their own, kind of waiting to see what group they can click with. And everything that was said about him was positive from the teammates, from the coaches, from McPhee and the Canadian podcast. Everything was positive. At times, the eye test maybe wasn't there as he was kind of quiet on the bench, but I'm not going to judge him based off of that. Now, next year, if more chatter comes out about how he is in the locker room and some of those old demons that everyone in Buffalo loves to bring up, then we can have a different conversation. But I'm with McPhee. I think he passed all the judgments that he needed to. He passed the eye test. He did put up some points, did put up some big goals. And I'm just marveled at all the time and space he creates when he has the puck and he's just gliding with his feet on the ice.
Yeah, and I'm that perhaps there could be some jealousy with some of the veteran players and a Jack Eichel coming into the club. I'm really concerned about that.
Of course. I mean, it's an ever-changing situation, and I think the red carpet was rolled out for him. A lot of attention did go on, starting with his health situation and then the adjustment. And I mean, I don't know what it's like to be in a locker room, but I'm sure the media was grilling the players. Hey, Jack Eichel's here. How do you feel about that? And then they finish that media scrum. Then the next media scrum. Hey, Jack Eichel's here. Then they go on the NHL network the next day after practice. Hey, Jack Eichel is here. So sure, I'm sure that takes some type of toll. These are professionals. They've been through it before, but they're also human and it does take a toll. And they probably do get sick of hearing his name. Just like Eichel wanted to get on the ice as fast as possible, I'm sure his teammates wanted him out there as fast as possible so they can focus on the conversations about the performance on the ice instead of all the what ifs and how do you feel and what does he bring to the team and what can he do and just all those, you know, cookie cutter, can opener type of questions just to get someone talking.
Stay with the turn. We're going to be talking about these numbers. So, quarters, BGK blocked the second most shots in the National Hockey League this past season. So why are they not in the poll? Well, I'll tell you something here. None of the teams in that category here in the playoffs. Coming up next, we'll get much more. Stay with us. You're listening to Locked On Golden Knights. Our partners at BetOnline to be the number one source for all of your betting needs with sports information. Find all of the latest odds, the latest news and developments, including this year's NBA offense, Major League Baseball scores, fights, and even next season's, as well as, of course, the National Hockey League. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website today, or you can use your mobile device to learn more about the trend and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Welcome back to Locked On Knights, and thank you for making us your first listen. For your second listen, check out the Locked On Now podcast that comes your way each and every night, and every NHL team with analysis from all of our local experts, all the teams that are in the playoffs, I should say, and it's free wherever you get your podcast. Back from Las Vegas, he's Chris Golic. I'm Tony Kradaskis. I dug up some stats. I had a good time on Sunday just digging a lot of numbers. I don't get to do that frequently, so I kind of enjoy it. And I'm not a big, like, analytics guy, as you know, but I dug up stats on block shots from this past season. Believe it or not, VG's second in block shots this season in all NHL. VGK blocking 1,310 shots, average block shots per game, around 16 blocks per game. And San Jose, a team that had just 32 wins, led the league with 670 block shots a game. And when I was looking at this numbers, I felt that the block shots stat would be important, right? And it would show the teams were making a good effort defensively. But as it turns out, again, none of these teams made San Jose, VGK, Chicago, the Islanders, the Flyers, the Senators, Montreal, and Vancouver. None of those top eight teams, Chris. I really thought that the statistical leaders in this category would be primary playoff teams.
So, yeah, I mean, this is a fun topic to go over here. And me being the numbers geek that I like to be at times, I wanted to look at the shots allowed per game and see if there's any type of correlation to block shots. With the Golden Knights blocking the most shots and then, you know, the Sharks up there as well, my original concern, and the Blackhawks are right there, Islanders, Flyers, all these teams that are not in the playoffs. So my original thought in my mind was, well, maybe they're giving up just a ton of shots per game. So eventually the just law of averages, they're going to hit some players. So looking at the opposite end of this right now, first of all, the average shots faced in the NHL is a low of 28.17 and a high of 35.49. So our window is pretty small. You've got basically a standard deviation. Is that the right thing? I'm trying to go back to like fourth grade math. But either way, your window is 7 shots on goal, high and low, as far as the difference goes. The Golden Knights faced 29.98 shots per game. That ranked 8th as far as the least shots faced amongst the 32 NHL teams. Some of the top teams, playoff teams, Hurricanes, Kings, Bruins, Kraken, but then you got the Flames, back to the Capitals, Lightning, Golden Knights. Going on the other side of this, Tony, teams that faced the most shots per game: Arizona, Columbus, Montreal, Philly, Detroit, Ottawa, Anaheim, Winnipeg, Chicago, Buffalo, New York, all the way down to the Islanders, all the way down to the Oilers, which were around the 25th or 24th team as far as most shots faced. So where my just initial amateur conclusion here is the Golden Knights didn't give up a lot of shots, and they blocked a lot of shots. So that just, without even looking at their plus-minus differential and things like that, makes me believe they were a pretty solid defensive team.
Yeah, so you think those numbers and being a good defensive team, but there were some lapses. And again, they did not put bodies in front of the net. And imagine it tighter. And imagine if they had Alec Martinez for 50 right defensively, because he was the shot-blocking leader. And a season ago, Knab led VGK 179 blocks, missing some time. And Alex Petrangelo, his block shot numbers 104 for VGK. So you're saying that it could point to a better effort for VGK than we even thought.
Yeah, I mean, without digging too deep, that's what I like. Now, Tony, you said we faced we blocked 1,300 shots in 50 games without Alec Martinez?
1,300, period, for the entire season.
Right, but 50 games without Alec Martinez, we blocked that.
Yeah, 50 of, yes, correct.
So we would have had like 6...
A lot more.
Yeah, there would have been like 1,600 blocked shots.
For sure.
I mean...
They would have absolutely led the league.
Yeah, I mean, low shots on goal faced, high percentage of shots on goal blocked. Just at face value, those are it's a Barry Trotz type team, isn't it, Tony?
Yeah. You know, to me, though, you know, block shots show the teams put players, I would guess, in front of the net. I mean, I see a lot of that defensively for VGK. And the other thing that we see is that a lot do not get through to the goalie, but yet they were giving and some bad goals this past season. Won't get into that. And also, a block shot could lead to for several teams as well. Did you see any signs that VGK utilized blocking shots to get them started from the defensive end into the O zone?
Maybe. I mean, I'm just trying to think about just the eye test right now and being at games and such. I mean, sure, you could block a shot off the shin pad. It could ricochet, you know, with a high rate of speed, and then you catch a defenseman on their heels because they have to turn and catch one of our forwards who's going full blast at the puck. But when I look at these numbers, I don't feel like those numbers match what I saw from the eye test. And we could dig deep in the numbers. You yourself said you're not big on numbers and stuff like that, which is fine. I mean, it's not, you know, you can look at these numbers, but for every stat that I give or you give, I can find you a counter stat that shows that your stat isn't necessarily that good. That's just kind of how statistics work in general. So to answer your question, I don't feel the numbers supported what I necessarily saw on the ice.
take a look at the updated playoff picture. We've got much more on the way. Stay with us. You are listening to Locked Golden Knights. Summer is coming, and with summer, you're going to need on the go. Built Bars are the perfect to take with you on all your family missions. Throw them in your bags, in your kids' backpacks, wherever. Make sure that everyone has a bar so that you are fueled for the summer adventures. And the best part about Built Bars, they're healthy and they are also delicious. No more sacrificing delicious food for health. With Built Bar, you can have both. And it's very easy. All you have to do is go to built.com. All Built Bars and Puffs are covered in 100% real chocolate. And Chris, you and I, we received your package over the weekend. And I submit to everyone our Built Bar that we received called Birthday Cake. And this is a collector's item because it's the last one that I have remaining out of the dozen or so that I received. But they're really good, right? And they're marshmallowy. And they really are delicious.
Meal replacements. Meal replacement. Take it on the go, Tony. Take it on the go.
All right. Take it wherever you go this summer and sign it up now. We've got everything from banana cream pie and even churro. And who doesn't want a pro taste like a churro or taste like a birthday cake bar? That's exactly what it's called. And again, that's my last one that remains. Built Bar, it makes sure that everyone has something that they can really look forward to having. And it contains 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. Go to built.com to get your favorites. Banana cream pie, again, raspberry, double chocolate, so many more. They are all delicious. And make sure that you get the new flavors that come out all the time. Check them out at built.com. Go to built.com. You can use the promo code LOCKED15, get 15% off of your order. Use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. Welcome to Locked On Golden Knights. Tony Cardasco along with Chris Golic from Las Vegas. And don't forget to take us with you wherever you go. We are free and available wherever you get your podcast each and every day. And you have a perfect bracket going. And the last
game completed. I have a perfect bracket. Flames just won, Tony. Flames just won.
The Flames won 3-2.
Flames win.
In overtime. Right. At the battle for Alberta coming up. Edmonton and Calgary.
Bloodbath.
I'm one of the only people that calls them Calgary. I heard someone on the broadcast and I called them Calgary and I was jumping for joy. So we've got that series coming up. On the other side of the bracket, you've got Colorado and St. Louis. What are your initial thoughts on those two series coming out of the West?
I mean, what an amazing first round. I mean, five of the series went 7 games. And I believe the NHL record for 7-game series throughout the playoffs was 7. So we're inching in on that number one, which is just exciting by itself. Looking ahead, battle for Alberta, oh my goodness, that's going to be an absolute bloodbath. I mean, those regular season games are nuts. Now you're putting Calgary and Edmonton into the boxing ring together. I think Edmonton's going to come out of that series. I think that's a coin flip. I don't have a lot of rationale beyond just maybe this is the year that they kind of get things going. Mike Smith got a Game 7 shutout, Tony. Who had Mike Smith getting a Game 7 shutout on their bingo card for the 2021-2022 NHL season?
He definitely proved you wrong. Back off on Mike Smith because he proved you wrong not only with that shutout and the series clinching game and that victory, but Money Pucks him at saved above expectations. Everyone thought that Smith would get shelled. He played well throughout. He is the number one ranked goalie in the playoffs. So pipe down.
I guess. I mean, this is kind of the stats versus the eye test thing. I don't know if it was game 3 or game 4, but he had, I think 3 goals went in that I was watching. I'm like, ooh, I mean, so sure. I mean, yeah, the stats support him doing a good job. And 40-year-old Mike Smith had a great first round overall. He got the game seven shutout when it mattered the most. So you got to give the guy a ton of credit. Yeah, I definitely dogged him on many of our shows before. And, you know, he won a playoff series. He won a big playoff series. Can he win two big playoff series? On the other side of the West, you got Colorado and St. Louis now. St. Louis has the Stanley Cup pedigree. You have to give them an edge as far as that intangible goes. But skill on the ice, you just can't touch Colorado. The way the team is coached, from all the talent on the ice, I think St. Louis makes a series of it. But I think Colorado gets there in six, and you know, two or three of the games, you know, I don't think St. Louis is even going to be in. Think about last year, Tony. So Colorado had a long break, and then the Golden Knights came in after that seven-game series against Minnesota. I thought Vegas was going to actually come out of the gate fast and then, you know, kind of taper off throughout the game because they just, you know, had that seven-game series. I think they only had 24 hours off between, if I recall, and they weren't even in that game from the word go. So Colorado's going to come out hot, and St. Louis, if they can get out of that first period only being down one goal or being tied, okay, fine. But Colorado, that's just a machine that's, I don't see it happening. But congrats to your Rangers, by the way.
Yeah, we'll get into the Rangers here in a second. I just want to give a shout out to Dustin Brown. 18 mm-hmm. seasons in the National Hockey League, two Stanley Cup titles. It was twice, I believe, an Olympian. So shout out to him for his illustrious career with the LA Kings. A couple of things, you know, stand out to me. Number one, you know, St. Louis has two good goaltenders, and we haven't seen, because they've just played the first round, where goalies are starting to really wear down. Of course, we saw with Pittsburgh having to play all three goalies due to injuries and such. But and then there's also no back-to-backs like we saw in the bubble, right? There's not going to be any back-to-backs. So teams have an extra day to recover and to recuperate. So the option, I think, before we get into the East, can teams win the Cup now going forward on goaltender? Or are they going to have to start to platoon them?
I mean, okay, let's just kind of quickly go through the recent Stanley Cup winners. Tampa times two, Andrei Vasilevskiy. No goaltending issues even to talk about there. Before that, I believe, was St. Louis and Binnington.
Binnington.
Same thing. No issues there. Binnington, you know, do I look nervous? And all those fun quotes that he had. Before St. Louis was Washington. Now, Washington, there was a little bit of a goalie issue. Brayden Holtby was not the starting goaltender in the first series. It slipped him. Wasn't Kemper. He was, I think, Arizona at that time. It slipped my mind, but Brayden Holtby was not the starter, I believe, for the first two or three games. And then they were down 2-0, I believe, against Columbus in the first series that year. And then that's when Holtby came in there. Before that, I mean, I'm thinking about like the Blackhawks runs and the Kings runs, who were basically kind of alternated before that. And Jonathan Quick, and then you had a combination of Crawford, Antti Niemi for the Blackhawks. Pittsburgh Penguins, now we can have a discussion about the two goalies there, of course, between Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury. So just going over the recent Stanley Cup champions in my head, only one of those teams was kind of really platooning goalies, and of course Marc-Andre Fleury, who seems to be a lightning rod of platoon lately, poor pun, but that's just kind of what it is. So just based on what I just said, I don't think you need to platoon the goalies. And looking at the teams that are left, as far as a goalie platoon goes, St. Louis maybe now, given how the first round went. But Colorado's not going to have any type of platoon. Edmonton, Calgary, which I also say Calgary, and I get yelled at for it. Florida, are they going back with Spencer Knight and someone else, or is Spencer Knight still the man down there?
No, it's not Spencer Knight. It's not Anderson. Who's their other goalie?
I don't know. If I was a better podcaster, I'd know offhand, but I'm not.
We don't follow the East here.
Rangers, Shesterkin, obviously, and Antti Raanta with Carolina. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot of platooning that's going to be happening. So just based off what's happening right now and based off of previous Stanley Cup winners outside of Pittsburgh, I don't see teams platooning goalies, and, you know, maybe that salary cap needs to be utilized elsewhere.
It's Bobrovsky, obviously, is the other goalie for Florida. Right. And I was getting, Anderson confused, because Anderson is with the Canes, but he's been out injured, I think, since April the 16th with an upper body injury. And so it has been Antti Raanta who has been in net for the Canes. And they take on the Rangers, and the Canes come off of their series against Boston, where each team won on home ice. And now the Rangers, do the Rangers carry the momentum of winning the three straight and coming back against Pittsburgh into this upcoming series? The Breadman had the game winner in overtime. What a sensational series, though. A lot of drama, just great comebacks back and forth. We had the triple overtime game early on. It was a really good series, and I don't know if it took a lot out of the Rangers. But, and also, you know, one thing, too, you know, because everyone out there, full disclosure, I am a New York Rangers fan from birth, pretty much. So that's going back to, like, the Stone Age. But Shesterkin really – Chris, Shesterkin never seemed comfortable, never really got into a rhythm or a groove like we've seen him throughout the course of the season. And I think that's going to be important, whether or not he could be comfortable in net. Rangers can ill afford to come back from any deficit, be it goals in games or actual games. They can't try to come back again in a second consecutive series.
The playing field is even as far as that series goes in a lot of ways. But number one, both teams, seven-game, hard-fought series. So as far as fatigue coming in, I think both teams are pretty even there. Shesterkin is, I think he's going to improve. I mean, he just got 7 games of playoff experience in the most high-pressure situations and the highest of a pressure situation going Game 7 overtime, which, oh my goodness, that was just remarkable. And as I've told you, my son Christopher is his second favorite team is the Rangers, and also my daughter Allie, her second favorite team is the Hurricanes. So I think maybe Tuesday morning we're going to do a partial segment with them, and they're going to tell you why their teams are going to win, and there might be a little brawl happening behind me back here, but it's going to be a lot of fun, and a lot of fun in the Golic household, and a lot of fun enjoying that series. And fun fact, folks, I amateurly like to bet sports and have some fun myself, but I feel like I got a good pulse on, the playoffs this year. I'm not going to brag, but my bracket did go 8-0. I also put out the three picks yesterday on our lockdown Twitter handle. I also said today, Tony, I put out around 9 or 10 this morning, Vegas time, about six to eight hours before the game. I said the New York Rangers win Game 7. In overtime. So excuse me. Yep. Excuse me for a second. It's a longer reach. I'm getting older too, so this is a longer reach, and I think I need to see a doctor
Did you have the Breadman Panarin scoring the game winner, as I did, and then I had some banter with my good buddy Ron Duguay on Twitter, and he said the Breadman was gonna score, and he also predicted the final score 4-3. And so he and I went a little bit back and forth, and it was just great fun. But it was I actually said that the Breadman would score the winning goal, and he would take Mika's like little iPad and throw it into the Hudson River. That's how I thought that would end.
I did see that. That was what a funny moment, though. And you know what a great moment, you know, where the cameras caught those two on the bench, and it just takes the iPad and says, Writer. No, you're not going to look at that damn thing. It doesn't matter right now. I mean, it's like sports are awesome. I mean, that's why you and I are here. We love watching sports. We love, like, for me, it's not just about watching the outcomes of games and talking about what happened. It's those moments between. I've mentioned a ton of times that I am a very amateur level ice hockey official here in Vegas. And what I enjoy most, it's not the games themselves. It's not reffing the games. I sometimes enjoy calling penalties and yelling at people. I'm not going to lie about that. But what I enjoy are those between the whistles moments where you just BS with the players for a second. You know, hey, good shot, or, you know, goalie, next time open your eyes so you can save that one. Just little funny chirps like that. Like that's, or when I'm skating down the bench, you know, working the lines and stuff like that, having those interactions with the players and stuff like that. Like That's what I personally enjoy about sports. That's the stuff that I like. And, you know, watching little things like the players talking between the whistles, laughing, smiling. Even in Game 7, there's a couple times you saw players on both teams kind of sharing a lighthearted moment and stuff like that. And, you know, I think that's what fuels me as a fan of the sports, a fan of all sports, not just hockey.
Yeah, and we know what else fuels you in the sport of hockey. It's teaching your son how to drop his gloves. So you could tell all of the listeners and viewers about this. And then you walked him over to the penalty box after he dropped the gloves with you. That was a golden moment. That was terrific.
I'll put that on our Lockdown Twitter handle maybe once we're done or in the morning.
Let's do that.
But he dropped the gloves just fine by himself. I didn't teach him that. That's the thing. I just did it, and there he goes, and he knew what to do.
It's going to result in a penalty, though, as he knows. And you walked him right over to the penalty box, and that's it. 2 minutes in there. It's like a two-minute timeout at home. Oh, five for fighting.
That penalty box at Lifeguard Arena, Rink 1, I've spent a lot of time there. I've spent, not as a player, but as an official, I've spent a lot of time at that referee's crease giving the signals and explaining things and having that door slammed in my, not in my face, but slammed as I'm going away. And I just kind of give the look back like, do that again.
Last year we saw Tampa, they disposed of Florida in 6 games. But this year, Panthers win the President's Cup, 122 points. And they have last series where we saw the Panthers winning their first series since I think it was 1996. And we'll have to see how they play in this game. This series, the opening game, I think will be something where they can make a statement. And I think that Florida's the better team there. And I just like the way that they had moved the puck in that first series as well. Nick Paul of Tampa Bay, he had 2 goals in the deciding game against Toronto. I had Toronto and Edmonton again as my two finalists, and Toronto is right there. I just think next season they'll get over the hump if they don't make too many major moves. And then of course we've got Alexander Barkov, who has 5 points this season against Tampa in 4 games. I think it's going to be a pretty good series, but I think that Tampa is not the same Tampa team that was dominating the NHL last season or last couple of years, are they?
No, I mean, they got a lot of breakdown going on, and they've played so many games, with the exception of Columbus blowing them out a few years ago. They have played so many games over the last 2 seasons, and winning a Stanley Cup does take its toll physically, mentally, and everything else, fatigue and any other factor you can think of. Toronto, I mean, great team, amazing talent. You can go up and down that roster, and outside of the goaltending, you can really, you know, it's hard to poke a hole in the Toronto roster, besides the fact that maybe they're just a cursed franchise, which seems to be the case right now. But, you know, Tampa, they have the pedigree, they have the coaching staff, and you got, you know, in my opinion, the best goalie, you know, pound for pound in the NHL still. That said, I do think Florida will be able to handle Tampa. The run has to end at some point. The run just has to end at some point. I do think Florida will get there. It probably goes 6-7 games like everything seems to be doing this year. But I do think Florida is going to get there. And, you know, on the other side, in my pool, in my bracket that remains perfect so far, I do think the Rangers will handle Carolina. No good reason besides the fact that when I'm doing a pool like this, I just try to be somewhat contrarian. I know there's like millions of entries, but looking at like the leaders, like the way they separate the points is there's a tiebreaker for amount of games each of the first round series takes. And that's just a, you know, whatever. But as I'm looking at the leaders, no one has the Rangers winning the cup, let alone going to the cup. So if the Rangers win the cup, I'm going to win the $5,000 in this NHL bracket challenge.
All right, and you're going to buy us some more Built Bars because I'm just about out.
I'll buy you a modem.
Oh, my. Tomorrow I've got some more numbers because I hate numbers. I really despise numbers. But I have some numbers for you, Chris, tomorrow on the show about VGK net front presence. Okay? I'm going to go deeper. Tony Cardasco and Chris Golic here in Las Vegas, and we thank you all for making Locked On Golden. Don't look at me like that. Locked On Golden Knights, your first listen each and every day. And for your second listen, make sure that you check out Locked On NHL from all the second round matchups now to each Stanley Cup kiss. Locked On NHL will cover the playoffs like no other. Hear the latest news and opinions from local experts each and every Monday through Friday, free and available wherever you get your podcast. Stay with us coming back tomorrow, of course. We're here 5 days a week. Now you can watch us do this magic, perform all these magical tricks through the invention of YouTube. So check that out. For my man Chris Golic, I'm Tony Cardasco. Jeez. We'll see you once again tomorrow right here on Locked On Golden Knights.